Good morning. So, I was reading a Jewish parable recently that caused me to stop and think, and this is how it went. It was said, "Don't avoid a job that has no end or work that will never finish." What is this comparable to? Like a person who is shoveling water from the sea and dumping it on the land. The sea will never be empty of water, while the land will never be full of water. When realizing this, the person shoveling the water got angry. They said to him, "Hey, dummy, why are you angry? Since you get paid for your work every day." Who in here likes to shovel water? All right. Thanks, Dave. How many people feel like they are metaphorically shoveling water every day, though? Probably a lot of us. Like changing diapers, dealing with dysfunctional people, or doing a job that no one seems to notice. In this country, I have found just buying food becomes a test of survival. It's one of the most undesirable experiences you can hope for in the first world. Or how about just having to explain to someone who innocuously asks you, "So what do you do and what are your plans?" And you have to answer that you're not sure what you do, and plans are the farthest thing from your mind. I think this is all part of shoveling water, especially in my life. It can just be mind-numbing survival. This rabbinic parable that I just read to you of shoveling water is drawn from a well-known Greek myth of Sisyphus, a king who constantly evaded death by deceiving the gods. Eventually, death caught up with him, and he was punished in the underworld. What was his punishment? Well, everyone in this room knows what his punishment was, because you've grown up with its image in your mind. He had to take a boulder and push it up a hill, all the way up the hill. And at the very top, the boulder would roll all the way back down the hill. Then you have to start over and do it again and again and again for eternity. Talk about a bad day forever. The Jewish parable, though, takes that Greek myth of shoveling water and has a different view of that endless labor. Whereas the Greek tradition saw this type of work or suffering that we experience here on earth, which seems to have no end, no goal, no hope, the Greek tradition sees it as a severe life punishment. Jewish tradition, on the other hand, chose to focus on the promise of payment. Yes, life is long and it's hard, but if you are doing a job for the king, even if it is shoveling water, at the end of the day, you're going to be compensated. There is a reward for righteousness. The word, though, here, sachar, is not really reward. It means more like salary. It's what you've earned. Means wages, compensation, payment. It's what is owed for services rendered. So, you'll remember, where does this all start? It starts in the Bible, of course. In the Hebrew Bible, if you want to turn to Deuteronomy 24, you'll remember that God is very concerned about a worker being paid fairly. It's throughout the scripture, starting in the Torah. Deuteronomy 24, verse 14. "Do not take advantage of a hired man who is poor and needy, whether he is a brother Israelite or even an alien who lives in one of your towns," which would basically like saying a refugee today. "Pay him his wages each day before sunset." And the word wages there is sachar. Because he is poor and he is counting on it. Otherwise he may cry out to the Lord against you and you will be guilty of sin. This goes on into the end of the Tanakh, to Malachi, the last prophet. Malachi chapter 3, verse 5. The Lord's talking here. I will come near to you for judgment. I will be quick to testify against sorcerers, adulterers, perjurers, against those who defraud laborers of their wages. Again, keeping payment or sachar back from those who have earned it, who've worked. Sachar is translated in the Greek Septuagint as misthos. And this idea of compensating a worker fairly for their work continues on into the New Testament with misthos. Go to, let's say, 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17. The elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor, especially those whose work is preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, "Do not muzzle the ox while it is treading out the grain, and the worker deserves his wages." How about James chapter 5, verse 1. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Verse 4, look, the wages you have failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. So this is throughout this idea that a worker deserves their payment, and everybody knows this. It's good to be reminded that we're not just pointlessly working, that we have a good and just master, the Lord of the harvest. Now, look at Luke 10, as to get more specific with our call, especially from Jesus. Luke 10, verse 1. This is when Jesus is sending out the 72, and he says in verse 2, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves. Do not take a purse or bag or sandals, and do not greet anyone in the road." And it, you know, it says if you enter a house, this is what you're supposed to do. Verse 5, if a man of peace is there in that house, your peace will rest on him. If not, it will return to you. Stay in that house, eating and drinking, whatever they give you. For the worker deserves his wages. Again, that reward or that payment for the work that you're doing there in that ministry. So in God's eyes, we are like laborers in the fields of the world. When we decide to follow Jesus, like here in Luke 10, we surrender our lives to God and we make a personal covenant with him. And therefore, we've entered his workforce. We are no longer the harvest or the mission field, sometimes called. We have become the workers. We've become the missionaries, that bad word in this country. Maybe you've heard that expression. You're either a missionary or you're a mission field. You're nothing else. You're either working for the Lord in the field, or someone is out there trying to reach you for the Lord. You can't be in between. So we're all working in the fields now at harvest time. And whether we realize it or not, according to Scripture, we're all going to be compensated for that work. Contrary to a lot of teaching, and I don't know where it all started at some point, but once you get saved, it's all, nothing really matters anymore. You're saved. And so some people have taken that as liberty to say, well, I don't need to do anything. I'm saved. And all kinds of, let's call it heresy, have sprung off of that. So just to give you a few examples that there's something coming to us, whether we want it or not. Matthew 5, verse 11. "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven." Again, it's not really reward, it's your compensation. It's what's coming to you. It's that same word. Sachar comes from. Luke chapter 6, another example. And that's because you're persecuted for serving the Lord. Luke 6, verse 32. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Notice that language again, credit. You get credit. Where is that coming from? Verse 34, and if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you'll be the sons of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. So again, that word of payment, of compensation, which is often translated here as reward, that's if you're loving people who actually hate you. A very difficult thing to do. One other example, Matthew 6, and there's more. I'm just pointing out a couple. Matthew 6, verse 1. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men, to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. No compensation. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their compensation in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. And then your Father who sees what is done in secret will do what? He rewards you. And this isn't pie in the sky. This is a real word. It's in a text here. It means something. So we'll talk about that. Everybody talks about the gold crowns in Revelation, you know, that people, you get certain things, and then they throw the gold crowns down at the feet of Jesus, so they're like meaningless, but we'll come to that in a bit. So this idea of we're laborers in the field, let's see what Paul has to say, 1 Corinthians. The Apostle Paul, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to his own labor. Again, there's going to be a compensation for the labor that each one of us have done. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as an expert builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should be careful how he builds, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If a man builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, his work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each man's work. If what he has built survives, he will receive his reward, his compensation. If it is burned up, well, maybe he won't receive it, if you read the rest of the verse there. So there is, God is God. God is just. God is good. It's there. But we'll notice from reading this that we all have different jobs, right? Somebody watered, somebody planted, somebody's going to reap. And unfortunately, some jobs are harder. Some are less flashy. Some are thankless. And I can think here at Narcisse of at least three jobs or four that would fall into that category. One is the nursery. Doing the nursery, and these are all jobs that if we didn't have them, the church couldn't function as we do. Forget someone standing here reading from the Bible. Who cares about that? If our kids are going crazy, I would not be here. So that's the one thing. Taking care of the kids is a very crucial job, but often it doesn't receive the glory that other ones do. Doing the sound system, the guys there in the back, I've put in a few years myself, and it's also not a very well-honored job. In fact, the sound person is the person that you never want to hear or see from, because if you don't hear from them, then you know the sound is going great. If you do, then you know they don't want you to see them, because it, and so they only get publicity when they don't want it, let's put it that way. But another, it's a crucial job that we just often forget about, but it's not an easy job. And then the other one is opening and closing the building here in the morning. Someone's got to get here early in the morning. It's got to clean a little bit, set up the food, set up the water. And the same thing in reversal, cleaning up, locking up. Both those jobs they're crucial if we're going to meet in a building with lots of people, but they don't receive the honor or the glory that often we give to other jobs. This is also kind of explained in John chapter 4. John chapter 4, verse 34. You just read from the Samaritan woman there in John 4, and we'll continue on past her. Jesus says, "My food is not to do the will, no, it is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Do you not say 4 months more and then the harvest? I tell you, open your eyes, look at the fields, they are ripe for harvest. Even now the reaper draws his wages." Again, that word that sachar is coming from. Even now, he's getting his wages. He's harvesting the crop for eternal life, so that the sower and the reaper may be glad together. Thus the saying, one sows and another reaps, is true. Just like Paul was saying, one sows, the other waters. Here's the key verse, verse 38. "I sent you to reap what you have not worked for. Others have done the hard work, and you have reaped the benefits of their labor." So, how many people have ever thought that in their lives? That you've done the hard work and someone else benefited from your hard labor. Exactly. It doesn't always seem fair. Some are more in the spotlight than others. Some are pastors of mega churches. Some are not. Some have done the hard work while others have benefited from that hard work. But all this talk about compensation and getting paid, isn't that kind of a shallow way to approach the gospel and our call that God has put in our lives? Shouldn't we be doing it for the cause, especially regarding God and the gospel? Shouldn't we serve God because of love, not because of personal gain? Isn't love the only legitimate motivator? So I want to read another Jewish parable to you. It's from the Mishnah, Avot 1:3. Antigonus of Socho received the Torah from Shimon the righteous. He used to say, "Be not like servants who work till their master for the sake of receiving a reward, but instead be like servants who work for their master without having that condition of receiving a reward." Now, the Hebrew word here is not sachar, where it talks about reward. It's pras. It's different than compensation or wages. It's more like a tip. In other words, don't be working for your job because you're expecting more than what has been agreed upon as your salary. It's an unconditional gift or tip. Say you did a job for someone and they gave you an additional amount of money for an excellent job that you did. That's what we're talking about here. I can think of two examples real quick. One, I was part of an email recently with an Israeli lawyer who was writing another person, and his email was basically saying, "You owe me. What we've agreed to is you're going to pay me this much, but also if you'd like to give me a tip, that would be great as well." And I just thought that was very funny because lawyers already make a lot of money. So I thought that was some chutzpah. Another story of similar chutzpah. I lived in New York City for a couple years. I rarely took taxis, but I think I took them two or three times. And then I remembered why I didn't take taxis. besides being expensive, when we got out and I had to pay, when we paid the high price, you know, you have to give a tip. And so gave a tip. And the driver just turned around. He's like, that's not a tip. You know, basically, like, keep your money. So, again, that idea that there's an expectation for certain people that they deserve more than what is agreed upon. Now, what is agreed upon? What are we working for? You remember, back in that earlier parable of shoveling of the water, you know, they said, dummy, why are you getting angry? Because you get paid every day. And it says in the parable that he's getting paid one gold dinar a day. And the currency dinar, if you've been around the world a bit, you'll know that it's a currency that's used in different countries today. I think of Jordan right now, the Jordanian dinar. Where's the word dinar coming from? All right, it's in the Bible. It's coming from the Romans, the Roman civilization. Denarius was the coin that is being referred to. So dinar comes from denarius, and one denarius was considered a day's wage in the time of Jesus. So what is the day's wage? And this reminded me of another parable of Jesus from Matthew 20, if you want to turn there, where Jesus talks about getting paid for your work for that one day. And there was a big issue there about who was getting paid what. And this is the focus, I think, this morning. Matthew 20, verse 1. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day, and he sent them into his vineyard. So, early in the morning is 6 a.m. Sun's rising at this time. About the third hour, that's 9 a.m. approximately, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, you also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right. So they went. So what's the difference between the two groups of people being hired here? What's the first group going to be paid, and what's the second group going to be paid? First group is going to be paid in the denarius, and the second group is going to be paid whatever is right, is fair. So there's kind of, it's not clear, but there's an assumption that it's going to be right, fair. So verse 5, so they went out. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour. So he goes out at noon, and he goes out at 3 p.m. And he does the same thing. So more people come to work in his vineyard. So this might sound like a strange story, but if you think about a vineyard, the grapes are ripe. And sometimes you pick grapes on the same day that you want them to be ripe because it affects the flavor. I know especially today for wine, that's how they do it. When it comes to the sweetness of the grapes. So he's trying to get his grapes done that day, and he's noticing that still they're not all getting done that day. So he goes out finally in the 11th hour. What time is the 11th hour? It's about 5 o'clock. So the sun's going to be setting in the next couple of hours maybe, next hour, next something like that. And he's like, well, why are you standing here all day and doing nothing? And they said, no one's hired us. So he said, come on, go work in my vineyard. So evening comes, verse 8. The owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the workers and pay them their wages. So here it is, misthos, sachar, right? Pay them what is coming to them. And how does he pay them? What order does he pay them in? He starts with the last group, and he pays them what? Pays him a denarius. That is a full day's wage. So, and it goes on and it says, verse 8. So call them together and start paying them. Start with the last ones and then go to the first. So the workers who were hired about the 11th hour came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first... So, this is something I never thought about. Two things. First, the first group is watching all this happen. So they see what the first one, what the last group gets paid. That's interesting. The second thing is it doesn't say what the other groups got paid. There's always the assumption they all got paid a denarius. But who knows? So what does the first group do when they receive only a denarius? They complain. They grumble. Why are they upset? What do they say? What are their complaints? Why should they receive more? Because they've worked all day, and they've worked during the heat of the day. Think again like John 4, where it says, you know, those who have worked, who've done the hard work, didn't reap it, but you've reaped it. And then what does the owner say in verse 13 to them who are grumbling? Friend, I am not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I am generous. And the Greek, it says, do you have a bad eye, even though I have a good eye? That Jewish expression of generosity. And so I'm seeing this now as it's not just about payment. This is about being tipped. You had agreed to a day's pay, a denarius, but now you want more than what I agreed to. I know often we come at this and we think, well, if you're so generous, then you can give me a big tip on top of that, right? You hypocrite. But that is the problem. It shows that they're expecting a tip. They're not coming honestly and saying, yes, this is what I've worked and this is what I've earned. They're expecting more. So here's one thing I'd like to bring up today. Are we serving God in hope of a big fat tip rather than what he has promised and what we have agreed to? And when I say tip, I'm not talking about like I'm going to get a bigger gold crown than you are. Because that's just, you know, that's way out there. And what good is gold going to do me in heaven anyways? I think this is a much more practical grumbling that we have here. And I think it might even have to do with, hey, God, why am I poor? Why aren't you giving me a blessing of a good-paying job? Or why don't I have more support than that person over there? And if it's not that, maybe it's just, hey, you know what? I've been working in this pretty lousy ministry job, and no one even knows I'm here. Or my spouse is off doing this, this, and this, and I am here taking care of the house. Or, again, all these other jobs that are never really noticed or paid attention to. It's easy to want something tangible right now. And again, what has God promised us? And what have we agreed to when we came into covenant with him? When we gave our hearts to him. So that's the one thing I want to bring up this morning about getting paid. The second thing, going back to this shoveling the water metaphor in God's work, slaving in the hot sun of the harvest field, we need to be remembered that your work is not in vain. There is a payday coming, and it's real. And it's not just a gold crown with a harp to accompany it. Our work, and it's even, I think there's even tangible results here for us to enjoy. While our work may never be known here by others, it's having an impact nonetheless. It's changing lives, societies, and countries. There is a reward for our faithfulness right now. And going back to the whole thing of missionaries and mission fields and harvest fields, Did anyone, I'm sure a lot of you read that article that came out in January from Christianity Today about the impact of missionary work around the world? Have you, can you raise your hand if I know I'm talking to, like, okay, so then let me give a little summary. Essentially, a scholar, the University of North Carolina, has done research for the last 14 years and come up with a crazy, and it's not even theory, they're starting to call it even fact, because it's been backed up by statistical analysis. This is not just someone's opinion. Anyone who's been part of our world the last 20, 30, 40 years, in our politically correct world that is very educated and informed, you'll know that missionaries are considered kind of like the bottom of the trash heap in the world's view today, often being considered small-minded and doing something that maybe often hurts people because it tries to change them, and there's these bad effects. And often it's been tied to colonialism and subjugation of peoples. Well, in fact, this guy has done all this research and has come up with that that is the exact opposite. Where there have been missionaries in throughout the world over the last 200 to 300 years, specifically among Protestants, conversionary Protestants, those who are preaching the gospel and trying to lead them to accept Jesus. This is what they say. Areas where Protestant missionaries had a significant presence in the past are on average more economically developed today with comparatively better health. Like, for instance, Cure Hospital there in Niger. You've got children who are needing all these operations. It's impacting their health. Lower infant mortality. Again, you think of like the work of Shevet Achim, babies that need heart operations. Babies, more babies are living because they're going and finding them and getting them heart operations. Lower corruption, greater literacy, higher educational attainment, especially for women. So women's rights has been completely helped by closed-minded missionaries. And more robust membership in non-government associations. Essentially, it's impacted democracy, where people have been able to vote and they've been able to think and learn. It's a great article. You should read it if you get a chance. So, one scholar says, we don't have to deny that there were and are racist missionaries. We don't have to deny there were and are missionaries who do self-centered things. But if that were the average effect, we would expect the places where missionaries had influence to be worse than places where missionaries weren't allowed or were restricted in action. We find exactly the opposite on all kinds of outcomes. Even in places where few people converted, missionaries had a profound economic and political impact. And finally, his research shows that the total is more than the sum of its parts. Christians collectively make a difference in society. And so this brings me back to shoveling water, that we may feel like we're shoveling water, and you may be shoveling water. I'm not going to say you're not, because that's how I feel right now in my own life. But today more than ever, we are looking for Christian rock stars. The global church has a virtual community that follows itself on blogs, video teachings, weekly sermons. We're constantly trying to find the next move of God, the next prophetic voice in our internet wilderness. But rather than big names and big ministries, what we really need are faithful servants. People who do their jobs without grumbling. People who do their jobs because of love. And I have to confess, that is not me. I have to confess, I am one of the grumblers. But since Valentine's Day was yesterday, it's good to remember that love is not always pretty. It's changing a dirty diaper when you don't want to. It's forgiving when you would rather not. And it's being honest when you would rather hide. It's shoveling water day in and day out. Love itself is work. And yet maybe love is the reward. Real love never gives up. Never gives up trying to be faithful, even when it has been unfaithful. And let me close with this. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the right time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Shabbat shalom.